Now, Tkachov would then go on to take Voronin's role as head of Department K of the SEB, and has since become head of DVKR, Military Counterintelligence. But the point is that Tkachov's time in SEB coincided with it being headed by none other than Sergei Korolev, who is now first deputy head of the FSB. Korolev also became one of Yablonsky's patrons. Indeed, it was Tkachov and Korolev who allegedly got Yablonsky a very lucrative role as head of the Union of Cognac Producers. I know it sounds ridiculous, but you know, these things are big money spinners. And in this rather more credible scenario, Traber was brought down by his rivalry with Yablonsky. And indeed, that might help explain why Korolev handled this personally. He was asserting his own authority and asserting that he looks after not only his own interests, but also his clients. But there is an additional twist to that. Korolev, for years, has been the pretty much undisputed heir to the FSB throne, waiting for the ailing director, Alexander Bortnikov, to die, retire, or otherwise get the hell out of his way. Putin, though, has been reluctant. He hates churn within the security apparatus. He knows Bortnikov, he trusts Bortnikov. Korolev is a little bit more of an unknown quantity. So from his point of view, he wants to keep Bortnikov in place as long as possible, even if Bortnikov can't really do the job these days. And also, Korolev has enemies. It will be a divisive appointment, even though he is the obvious candidate to succeed. Doesn't mean he will, but nonetheless, he is the obvious candidate to succeed. Now, Bortnikov is 74. He's finding it increasingly difficult to do the job, so maybe it is getting closer to the time of a transition. And so this may be Korolev actually showing his loyalty, acting as Putin's plumber, you know, sealing off the risk of leaks, and maybe also flexing his muscles. You know, Traber could conceivably be an embarrassment or a risk to the boss, so why didn't we deal with him? It's worth remembering that back when he headed the SEB, Korolev's reputation was, in the words of National Anti-Corruption Committee member Kirill Kabanov, a cleaner. In other words, the sort of person who could clean up problems for you, whether it was in the interest of the Kremlin or some other patron or customer. And this one final element which supports the idea that Korolev is clearing house ahead of a promotion or because his rivals are desperately looking for dirt on him. At the same time as Traber was being arrested, investigators also searched the home of Gennady Petrov. No relation to the Petrov who was murdered, by the way, despite the shared surname. Anyway, investigation in connection with the same case. Gennady Petrov is another one of the autoriteti, the criminal businessman, and another one of the associates of Tambovskaya. And Petrov was particularly infamous for his activities in Spain. He was very, very closely investigated during the Spanish Operation Troika. And Petrov, in fact, fled Spain for Russia on bail in 2010 and refused to return. So he's a wanted man there. As a result of this investigation, a bunch of phone transcripts, you know, trapped phone conversations, were released. And in them, Petrov and his associates seem to be claiming that they used their influence to help secure Alexander Bastrykin's promotion to head the investigatory committee, who, ironically enough, is now the man investigating the guy who may have got him his job. No clash of interests there. But another figure mentioned in the transcripts, under the pseudonyms Boltai Noga or Gulyai Noga, seems very likely to have been Korolev, who clearly had a close relationship with Petrov. I mean, at one point, he even promises to attend Petrov's birthday party, and certainly is perfectly happy to work with Tambov, to do them favours in return for payments. So, let me tie all these various strings together and see if I can make some halfway substantial knot with them. Point one. Traber is an old business partner of Putin's. He knows, probably quite literally, where the bodies are buried. Secondly, in a time of war, when the rules of what is acceptable criminality, shall we say, have indeed changed, Traber is embezzling from a strategic project that Putin had put his own authority behind, and yet was also needed by the state. And it's worth noting, after all, that we've had a lot of arrests of people, for example, involved in embezzling from border defences along the Ukrainian border and that kind of thing. This is not on. 3. Trabert is not sitting on his laurels. He's still picking fights and killing people. He's still a potentially destabilizing force, and if there's one thing Putin doesn't want at the moment, it's instability. 4. We have a local FSB boss who already has Trabert in his sights, and who knows that he could get quite a career boost if he can really get some serious scalp. 5. We have an FSB director in waiting who needs to show that he will defend his clients, even against one such as Trabert, who wants to show that he can reach out and get someone who is assumed to be under Putin's protection, but also has to demonstrate his loyalty to the Kremlin. There is still one piece missing. Now, Trabert is an interesting person. Apparently, he knew that the raid was coming, and when the FSB team arrived at his country house, two lawyers were already waiting at the door, showing their IDs. And according to one account, Trabert then later made a call before being taken away from his old push-button telephone. And he said, "It's over. The decision on me has been made. I know I will die in prison. Take care of the family." The decision has been made. I mean, that's the missing piece. There's only one man who could make that decision and make it final. There is no court of appeal from Putin's thumbs down. Now, Trabert, much like Yevgeny Prigozhin, for example, was never quite in Putin's real friend circle, though he certainly got closer to it than Putin's chef ever did. If you're not in that charmed small circle, though, then you're expendable. And one of the reasons why this might actually prove of much wider significance is that that is a lesson that everyone has now been reminded of. Someday, that may well come back to bite Putin, that lack of loyalty to any but the smallest handful of, let's be honest, embezzlers. This is no country for old men if the old man in question has dirt on the boss, or just simply becomes inconvenient. Trabert is learning that lesson. Well, that's the end of another episode of the In Moscow Shadows podcast. Just as a reminder, beyond this, you can follow my blog, also called In Moscow Shadows. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Galeotti, or Facebook, Mark Galeotti on Russia. This podcast is made possible by generous and enlightened patrons, and you too can be one. Just go along to my Patreon page, that's patreon.com/inmoscowshadows, and decide which tier you want to join, getting access to exclusive materials and other perks. However, whether or not you contribute, thank you very much indeed for listening. Until next time, keep well.
Au bistrot de la mère Ivana, c'est lui qui dit la grand-messe. À nous les bons à rien, les oubliés du quartier. Fernand, il préfère les chansons qui disent quelque chose aux conneries de la radio. Les soirées d'été au bistrot de la mère Ivana, faut le voir quand il se prend pour les du piano, on envoie les trémolos. Et moi, je suis là, agrippé aux zingues. Et qu'est-ce que ça peut faire ici ou en enfer? Pour l'enfer, j'ai bien le temps. Préfère les copains aux jolies filles, c'est dire s'il faut que j'oublie. Avec gueule que j'ai au bistrot de la mer Ivonne. Certains soirs, pourtant, je me dis, quand on a bu la dernière, que j'en ferai bien mon affaire. Aux humains, il vit avec le sien. Un croisé malinois au bistrot de la mère Ivonne qui a toujours sa gamelle, même quand mon Fernand mange dans les poubelles. Et moi, je suis là, agrippé aux zingues. Et qu'est-ce que ça peut
tonight is the truest music you've heard. So take your share of the gifts that are there. They all belong to you. And come what may, at the break of each day, we all begin anew once more. We all begin anew. Baby, 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 let's invest in.
Man, and hand me a free bottle. gets close to itself by day. Across the road next to the boarded up pub, the small team in the community garden work with unwavering. An agreeable destination. By sheer luck, I am sat on a little hill. The town's brass band pass beneath me. They're amateur acrobats. I stay put. A symphony.
Kavga fidanı canım alıp canan ile biter bir gün acılarım, biter bir gün acılarım
We'll be right back. Cause living is free and easy. See the De Dolomina's zijn terug. Want vrouwenrechten staan onder druk. Ook hier, in Nederland. Oneerlijk verdeelde zorgtaken. Peperdure kinderopvang. En taboe op abortus. Minder betaald krijgen voor hetzelfde werk. Lastiggevallen worden op straat. Omdat je een hoofddoek draagt. Of gewoon omdat je een vrouw bent. Huiselijk geweld. Of zelfs femicide. Het wordt tijd dat we weer voor onze...
Ja, daar zijn we dan. Dat is alweer even geleden. Door allerlei toestanden. Maar ja, we zijn vandaag op de Lotweg. In een ding dat heet The Wave. En daar zijn we omdat hier vandaag een boekje gepresenteerd wordt. Het is een boek met de naam... De IJzeren Baobab, een boom voor Papa Sakko. En we zijn in The Beach. Dus, en dat is een boekje naar aanleiding van... naar aanleiding van... Van alles. In het kort kunnen we daarover zeggen. Ik zal hier even een stukje voorlezen. Want er is een monumentale IJzeren Baobab. Die staat in de Wereldtuin. Ook wel de hoftuin van de protestantse diaconie aan de Nieuwe Herengracht 18. Vlakbij het Holocaust Monument. En die is gebouwd door de zoon van Papa Sakko. Papa Sakko was een kunstenaar uit Senegal. Die in de Wildeman-buurt woonde, 17 jaar lang. En die is vorig jaar in januari overleden. Papa Sakko stond aan de wieg van We Are